Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by a panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by Philip Beverly of Chicago State University, Democratic consultant Bob Creamer, Republican consultant Christine Dudley, and Charlie Kirk of Turning Point USA. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. And again, once again, we're having phone problems this evening, so we will be taking participation via email, and you can email us a comment at brucedumont@museum.tv. brucedumont@museum.tv. If you'd like to tweet us a question, it's @Dumo. And again, sorry for the phone problems, but in the last couple of weeks, we've had a lot of participation through Twitter and through email, and so we invite you to participate that way this evening. We have lots to talk about, and we're going to begin with a story that dominated much of the Sunday news programs today, and that is the continuing problem and crisis. The President of the United States has referred to it as a humanitarian crisis at the border, and that is the influx of young boys, primarily boys, some girls, from Central America that are flooding the southern part of the United States. Let's look at some of these devastating numbers. These are the apprehensions made by the U.S. Customs and Border Protection Agency, the apprehensions of unaccompanied migrant children. In 2014, thus far, the number is 52,193, and a year ago it was 26,206 for the full year, and of course we're just barely halfway through the year. Today, the Secretary of Department of Homeland Security was on Meet the Press, Jay Johnson, and he said, in talking about this crisis, he said, "We have to do right by the children." And then he continued by saying, "In the final analysis, our border is not open to illegal immigration, and we will stem the tide." Christine Dudley is one of our Republicans, so we're going to start with you, Christine. Do right by the children. That sounds like a good thing to say, but realistically, how do you do it?
Well, I don't know how you do it, and I think that this is another indication of this administration. I mean, this is yet another crisis that caught them. All of a sudden, now it is a crisis. What they're sending people to the border to do the deportation trials. And the other element of this that is very troubling is a lot of these young men who are being brought over are being sent over by cartels. There's a whole crime syndicate component of this that I would think that there could be a more infiltration to understanding why that's happening and diminish some of this influx.
Bob Creamer is one of our Democrats. Bob, what's your answer to the same question?
Well, these are kids 8, 10, 12, 13 years old, presenting themselves, turning themselves in, basically, as they get to the United States, hoping that they can find sanctuary here. They're being sent by their parents very often, sometimes probably by organizations. It's a real humanitarian crisis.
And how do we stop it?
The only thing we can do in the end is to get the countries involved to try and prevent them from coming in the first place. Once they get here, we need to deal with them in a humanitarian way and figure out a safe place to send them back. But this should not be confused or conflated with the immigration issue, the broad immigration issue in the United States. This is a very precise problem that is, I think, been identified now as something we need to deal with. And I'd love to hear what other people recommend that the president's
Charlie
not doing.
Kirk from Turning Point USA also joins us.
So you showed those two numbers. What was the difference of what happened within a year? President Obama artificially brought up the amnesty issue, and he pretty much wanted to pass comprehensive immigration reform.
Mm-hmm, sure.
So what did Central American families say? This is our free pass. Let's send our kids up to America. They're talking about immigration reform in America, and all of a sudden you saw a double in the amount.
So, Charlie, you think we should not have immigration reform?
No, that's correct. That's not what I'm saying at all. I'm saying that's
what
the reason
are you saying?
Coming.
What are you proposing?
Secure the border, number one.
How do you secure the border?
You militarize it, just like how we militarize North and South Korea. You do not allow one more person illegally into this country.
I want Phil Beverly.
Democrats have refused to do this for years, and Republicans.
Phil Beverly, I want you to weigh in on this, on the issue of what do we do with the children now? And what can we do, as Bob suggested, what can we do to send a different signal to the Central America that the families should stay there and parents shouldn't be sending their kids there?
I don't know that we can do anything. I know militarizing the border is the wrong thing to do.
Why?
Having been in the military, the job of the military is to engage the enemy in combat and defeat them. People coming across the border aren't the enemy to be engaged in combat and defeated. If you want to have a tighter border, that's different. Militarizing the border sends the wrong signal. Mexico is not North Korea. It's Mexico. And there has to be a different way of dealing with that border situation than
if
mounting heavy weapons and mowing people down, which is what you do when you militarize.
I don't think anyone is suggesting mowing them down. I think what Charlie's
talking
about.
Then you don't have the military there.
Let me just finish my point. We're not mowing anybody down at the DMZ. No one's got mowed down ever. It is the military presence on our border. And would that be, do you believe that would be any reason why someone might not want to try to come in the United States if we had a show of force?
No.
You think they would still get into the United States?
No, the Border Patrol is armed, and they're about as armed as the military is. They have the same sort of technology.
They're outmanned. They have requested drone technology and been ignored by Congress
actually
and the United States.
Actually, there are drones in the border now. But look, Charlie,
Rick Perry tried to request drones, and he got denied by the president. Go ahead.
The big point here is that most of these 52,000 children, they're not making it past the border. That's not the point.
That's only
the
ones that got caught.
The point is they're presenting themselves at the border because they think they can somehow get asylum in the United States. But, I mean, that's because they feel that the life they're going to have in Central America is so bad that their parents – think about this as a parent – that your parent will send you across Mexico to try and find a better life is an extraordinary statement about what's going on in Central America.
Let me just weigh in here. I don't or I acknowledge, because I've talked to immigrants or I've talked to Mexicans trying to get into the country. So I've talked that. This is a different story. It was alluded to by Christine. In many cases, it is not just a parent making that agonizing decision that you just brilliantly staged or stated. It isn't just that, getting on these freight trains and suffering all the possibility of loss of life on the freight trains. Because it's from Central America all the way through Mexico, which is a long country. It is the involvement of narco terrorists who are sending the message out to young men in their countries that there's now a free pass to the United States. They are nurturing some of these. And if that is one of the instigators of this situation at the border, it is not beyond comprehension that maybe some of those young people that are coming to this country are going to be doing favors for some of these narco-terrorists. And they are going to make our cities more dangerous because we're not going to be able to control them. Now, would you acknowledge that's at least a possibility? It's not just some harebrained scenario?
If they're not apprehended, obviously. But I think we have to play the intelligence game with them as well. And they have to be interrogated, debriefed. What can we find out about the narco traffickers?
That was kind of my point. Why aren't we infiltrating? This is El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras is what we're talking about in terms of the Central American countries. Most of the Mexican folks who are trying to cross over are bust back. We're talking specifically about these three countries.
When we come back, we're going to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about what pressure can we put on those Central American countries. Back shortly. Bruce Dumont back on Beyond the Beltway. Thank you very much for joining us. When Jay Johnson, who is the new Secretary of Homeland Security, was on Meet the Press today, he was explaining the current process that really has led to this issue. And basically he said that once the Department of Homeland Security has determined that someone is a child, they're turned over to HHS. But there is a deportation proceeding that is commenced against the child. That proceeding can take some time. So we are looking at options, added flexibility to deal with the children in particular, but in a humanitarian and fair way. So I guess we come back to the question of what is humanitarian, what is fair. What are the question that hasn't been asked is what are the costs? The Obama administration asked for a couple of billion dollars more to deal with this particular issue. So again, it appears that there's a process. Is there any way, Chris, that this process can be speeded up? Because we should also add that although there have been instances where there have been Americans who really do not want these potential deportations, deportees in their cities, there are others, like in Dallas, Texas, and throughout many places in Texas, where the humanitarian infrastructure and the social network is there, whether it's churches or nonprofits. They're trying to find a way to provide some lodging during this period of time when their deportation is ongoing. So that sounds fairly humanitarian, but should we be doing more?
Well, I think, you know, again, this influx, and it's like a hurricane coming. I mean, there's a crisis here, and usually the United States and most communities, as you've pointed out, come to the aid, especially of children. But the process itself, now that I understand from the LA Times that there's a great influx now of judicial I don't know what the terminology would be, but
the hearing officers.
Hearing officers, thank you. Too much sun today in the garden. But so they're trying to expedite some of this, but I think the professor's point earlier is the debriefing component of this is very, very critical. It is very critical because if people are being – because they are getting the message back in these countries what to say, how to say it, and what words to use as it relates to bypassing the system.
Why would we not go to something a little more swift that basically would say – and again, this is not the law at the moment, but this is where some of the frustration that has spilled over in this issue. And that is, if someone comes to the United States – clearly, as part of a wave, they're put on a transport plane and they're flown back to Central America.
The problem is
they take the buses back to Mexico?
Right.
This is a refugee crisis. This is not a typical immigration situation where people immigrate here to get jobs. These are children who are escaping violence. We're a humanitarian country. We don't return people to those circumstances until there is a we know that they're going to have a safe opportunity to go back someplace safe. That's what we have to make sure these countries provide them. It's unusual for the United States to be faced with the kind of refugee crisis that is faced by many other countries around the world on a frequent basis, but that's what this is, and it has to be dealt with in a different way than a typical immigration situation.
Charlie.
See, I agree with what you're trying to say, but I don't think it's a refugee crisis at all. I think that's just a branding way that the administration is trying to put it. I truly believe if you look at what's going on in Central America the last 20 years, there's nothing that's been happening the last two that is, you know, really different that would make this migration happen. And there's been research done, and certain people in the administration have even argued that because of the rhetoric that we're going to pass immigration reform, that is why they're
but
coming.
But here's the fundamental problem, though, for Republicans.
Of new violence.
Bob, this isn't Vietnam where we were airlifting people out of Vietnam and bringing them.
Let's be clear, though, for Republicans, this is a huge problem. If you're arguing that immigration reform is what attracts people to the United States, then I assume your solution is no immigration reform. And that is a massive insult to the Hispanic population of America.
Now, what the Republicans have always said is let's secure the border, or else if we start talking about it, this is exactly what's going to happen. We're going to see a massive invasion of people from Central South and Mexico come into America, mm-hmm. and we're going to undocumented immigrants, and we're not be able to process
them. What would you do with all those people who are here today, the 11 million undocumented
people? That's a total tangent. Let's secure the border right now.
At the beginning of the conversation, you said, let's not conflate these. So I want to talk about them both.
He has conflated
them. Well, I know, but
he argues that they are cause and effect.
They absolutely are together.
When you challenge it, then we go into a discussion. We can talk about that later, but I want to talk about, and I would like to talk about that, because it's a huge issue. But I do want to come back to the specifics of what can we do now, because there is a situation as these tens of thousands are coming to our shores now, or our borders right now. They're going on buses. They're going through this process, which takes time. And many of the receiving entities, including there are a lot of military bases, but including some small town detention centers, they don't want them. This is the frustration that they have with the government. And they just said that the government, the frustration is that the government, this is another example of the government not being able to do something. And it's the political spin that suggests, well, maybe it was something that Barack Obama said. Do you agree that it's at least possible that it is?
No. When you're dealing with juveniles especially, I don't want us to go exceedingly fast because then people fall through the cracks. And if we are who we say we are as a country,
maybe we're not. We need to step up
and say that we are not what everybody else aspires to be. And if that's the case, we need to say that. And that's okay. Just as long as we're transparent and truthful about it. If we say to the rest of the world, you know what? Don't come here. We've got nothing for you. Fix your own countries. Our borders are closed to you unless you're engineers or scientists or something. But you're not going to come here for a better life like people did 100 years ago.
But that's not going to happen anymore. But should we send a signal that we are a nation of laws and we take lawbreaking very seriously? And if you sneak into our country for whatever reason, you should be caught. You should go through your hearing, and you should be put on a bus or a transport and sent back to where you are, so those people that are doing the legal process of getting into this country, like generations did before them, Ellis Island and elsewhere, they waited in line. I think part of the great frustration that a lot of people have, and it's unfortunate that some in the media and some on the left criticize people because they disagree with this, and they call them racist and they call them everything else. You know, we talked about an American value. A lot of people talked about what an American value is. You know what I think an American value is? I think an American value is fairness. I think a lot of the frustration that people have with this issue and with the legal immigration issue, the reforms, is they don't like the idea of someone butting in line and all the other people that paid did it by the rules, they somehow look like chumps. I think that's part of this frustration that's out there.
I completely appreciate that frustration. And what I'm also aware of is we're dealing with juveniles. Right. And when juveniles break the law, in rare instances, are they treated as adults? These are, in many instances, children. So we have to have a process that, by its nature, is going to treat them differently than the average 25-year-old who's sneaking across the border at El Paso.
And what's the difference then? What is the difference?
Whatever the differences exist in the juvenile justice system, maybe they have the right to an advocate where an adult wouldn't have that right. Whatever differences exist, and just look at the states. Those protections need to be put in place for those children, and that takes time.
Charlie.
And I want to add one more thing. I think it's deceiving to think that we have apprehended every child that has come here. There are estimates that show that we've only apprehended half of all the children migrants in the last 6 months. So we might have 52,000 in DHS, control, but that means another 50,000 have gone through the cracks. I think this is a big issue of border security, and I'd love to hear the Democrats
clarify
that.
We have almost tripled the amount of resources for border security over the last over Barack Obama's administration. There's a massive
deportation
and there and enormously
there's more illegal immigrants.
Actually, not.
No, there isn't.
Just the opposite.
No, there isn't.
You just see right now.
The numbers are clear. That circumstance is different than the rest of the illegal immigration.
Immigration slowed considerably over the last number of years.
Because of the downturn in the economy.
Whatever reason,
the illegal part of it, Bob. I mean, the statistics are here. In the last decade, 4,000 unaccompanied children from the Central American nations that we talked about. And it has escalated to 10,000 in 2012, doubled in the last fiscal year, and now it's up to 39,000. Yeah. Why wasn't this identified as it was escalating, and now we are once again in crisis? Because I guess somebody wasn't looking at the metrics, somebody wasn't minding the store, and who are going to
be... What exactly would you have done, Chris, differently?
Well, you would just...
What would you have done differently besides not pass immigration reform?
Well, we're not talking...
What would you have done differently?
The border.
The
you
only
said
explanation
the borders have
that
been,
I have heard about this influx...
To Charlie's point,
one at a time.
Are we not... Are we not sending signals? And according to these cartels, they are charging money. They are smuggling these children in, and they are telling them what to say because they believe that there is an opportunity for them because the border is not being secured, or that it's being passive.
The only explanation I have heard.
We have to go for a break, but I want to get your response. The one aspect of the cartels, according to, again, what came out of the discussions today on the Sunday morning shows, is that many of those that have been deported from the United States, deported by the Obama administration, that have gone back to Central America, they are gang members. So these are gang members convincing other young people in their countries to come to the United States, flood our borders, and frankly screw things up. And so there's an element of revenge here. And again, what I'm concerned about, there's also an element that some of these alleged sweet young face people that are coming will end up being drug dealers and make our streets unsafe. Back shortly. Bruce Dumont back, and let us have our guests now introduce themselves, and we start with Bob Creamer.
Bob Creamer from Democracy Partners.
And Christine Dudley.
Hi, Christine Dudley, a longtime Republican consultant, government affairs, public affairs, and currently working on the Bruce Rauner campaign here in Illinois.
What are you doing for Bruce Rauner?
I'm working on outreach to women.
Okay. And Phil Beverly.
Philip Beverly. I'm an associate professor of political science at Chicago State University, where I've been for the last 22 years.
Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk, founder of Turning Point USA, a national student movement to educate young people on free markets, capitalism, and limited government.
We will continue with our discussion about what's happening on our border, but we do want to take a moment here for those listening around the country to basically announce that a longtime United States senator from Illinois and one of the most popular Democrats in the history of the state, Alan Dixon, died today in his home. Actually, tomorrow would have been his birthday. He died today. Alan Dixon was, again, one of the most successful senators, United States senator. He was the state treasurer. He was the secretary of state. He was a state senator. He literally really dominated Illinois politics for about over 30 years. And for those listening around the country, here's something to ponder, because Alan Dixon in 1986 lost a primary, a Democratic primary. And he lost the Democratic primary.
It was 1992. Bruce.
1992, I'm sorry. He lost the primary because he voted for Clarence Thomas. He voted to confirm Clarence Thomas. That got everyone in the Democratic primary system all riled up. There was a very wealthy person who was running against Alan Dixon by the name of Al Hofeld, who spent millions of dollars roughing up Al the Pal Dixon. And then there was also the recorder of deeds of Cook County, a woman by the name of Carol Mosley Braun, who entered the race as well. And she was very articulate and fresh-faced and caught on like a house on fire. And basically that three-way split, it defeated the one person that no one ever thought was going to be defeated, Alan Dixon. And Bob Creamer, you were involved in that campaign and starting setting up the situation. So obviously on a day like this, when someone is talking about the passing of someone, but I think it would be safe to say that Clarence Thomas would not necessarily, Clarence Thomas probably would have still been confirmed for the United States Supreme Court. But in looking at Illinois politics, had Alan Dixon not lost that primary, perhaps there would never have been a Senator Barack Obama or a President Barack Obama. Do you agree with that?
Entirely possible. That's right. I mean, given the way things happen, he was a very, very decent man, an enormous amount of integrity. We didn't agree on some of his policies, but he certainly was a wonderful person.
And he would have agreed, even with the challenge, he would have agreed with the challenge that when you take a stand that's a controversial stand, you can either succeed by that stand or you can lose your seat. And he lost his seat.
He did, yes.
Well, Carol. One of the things that I did not know Senator Dixon, but I knew him because he was such a legend when I was on Capitol Hill working the Illinois delegation. The one thing that I always remember, and I think good politicians should pay attention to this because all politics is local. Every morning he would get up and have a list of people to call and wish them a happy birthday.
Sure.
And even the most seasoned and jaded political operatives or hacks would look forward to the call
from
Alan Dixon.
Senator, yeah.
And then the next call might be to negotiate something that he needed, but you always remembered he called to wish a happy birthday. And I thought that was a lovely it was terrific. And I don't know a lot of politicians who do that, but it was so disciplined. And it speaks to Al the Pal, which was always his nickname, as I learned when I came to these shores.
And he clearly was someone that was very comfortable working across the aisle, whether it was going out and having a drink with President
definitely
Reagan.
Old school.
I mean, definitely the old school. And also a very close associate with Paul Simon.
I didn't appreciate, obviously, his vote for Clarence Thomas. I've never been a Clarence Thomas fan. And it was sort of sad to see his career in that way, on sort of that single vote. Because it's sort of overshadowed all the other things that he did to really benefit the state of Illinois during his tenure.
Would you agree that there would not have been a Barack Obama without?
There wouldn't have been a Barack Obama in the path that he came.
Right.
It wouldn't have been there for him. It would have had to have come a different route.
It might have come from New York.
Oh, might make it for a good movie. We could write a script right now.
Oh, we could write a script.
There you go.
About what is. Charlie, we're not going to ask for your opinion because you weren't born when it all happened because you're a young man. Let's get back to our discussion. We were talking about specifics of what can be done and what the causes are. And I want to at least have Bob sort of address the issue of what should we be doing in the sending countries? What should we be doing in Central America to make sure that any aid that goes there is being used wisely? And since those countries themselves have a difficult time fighting narco-terrorism, and if you have gang leaders in those countries now who have been deported from the United States, do you see why part of this might be revenge? They want to really screw up this country, and they also know that we are the biggest drug-using country in the world. They want, perhaps, some runners to be coming to this country to carry their drugs into the neighborhoods of Americans' urban areas.
I don't know if the intelligence community agrees with that analysis, but
well, they haven't thought about it yet. They don't have a talk show.
Yeah. Not as smart as Bruce.
Thank you.
The important thing, I think, is that there are carrots and sticks to use with these countries. Those carrots include the provision of some resources to provide safe haven for these folks to be returned. I mean, we need to make sure they're returned in a safe context. That's what we do in America. We look out for children. And when it comes to sticks, there are a number, as you say, of foreign aid programs that could very well be used, could be used to leverage their cooperation.
Philip, let me ask you, we need more
carrots than sticks.
I think so too.
Because we're, in a competitive sense, competing with the traffickers. They have enormous amounts of resources, especially the Mexican cartel. So if we think throwing a couple million dollars at something is going to have some impact, we got to be deluding ourselves because the cartels can match us dollar for dollar.
What can we do? I mean, I think everyone thus far, including myself, we've stated, I think, the obvious. The point is there is an economic reason why these kids are coming to the United States, why their parents are sending them to the United States, or why narco-terrorists want them to come here because they may want to use their services once they get to the United States. I think all of those things are possible.
But it's also because there is violence that they experience. I mean, I think there has been a
substantial... But that hasn't changed. That's not new.
But we
have violence on the streets of Chicago. There are 20, 30 people shot or killed every single weekend in this city.
But nothing to compare with what happens in some of these Central American countries.
I know that. But what happens if the influx of the drug cartels and their influence expands in the United States, in some of the urban areas of the United States, because there are kids there, they're looking for jobs, they're going to turn to prostitution, they're going to go to the schools, they're going to get sick, they're going to carry disease.
Of course, that might turn us to the question of whether there should be a continued war on drugs, on which we might actually agree.
I would agree on that.
But look, the one thing we should not do is say, oh, well, let's not have immigration reform because it sends the wrong signal. That's a crazy idea.
No, but you're conflating the issues
again. That's what I'm hearing from my Republican friends here, that that's the only thing you're saying that's causing this problem.
I can clarify, Bruce. But
clarify.
I would say that that's one of the reasons why they came. I do agree that there needs to be immigration reform, and I think if we listed out 100 things that needs to happen, you and I would agree on probably 70 or 80 of them, you know, making it easier to become a legal immigrant or, you know, expediting the, you know, the brain magnet that we want to become America, you know, immigrants from Ukraine or Korea. We can agree on that stuff. What we were saying is that let's not say the words amnesty without securing the border.
And fairness. I think Bruce's point about fairness.
But let's not say we're going to have comprehensive immigration reform. Like President Obama said the other day in the Rose Garden, I will act on my own through executive
action. And he certainly should.
No, he shouldn't. That's a different issue. When he says stuff like that, it only attracts more children and more people to come illegally. That's what it does.
Well, and these children aren't waking up in the middle of the night going, I'm going to America. Somebody is organizing them. Someone is being paid to organize them. And to your point about the narco-terrorism driving a lot of it, there, of course, are people who in desperation, but there is an organized effort here. We have to get to the root of that organized. Charlie talked a lot about technology, and he's the only one around this table who understands what a tweet is, at least knows how to tweet. But I think the use of technology, Bob, you referenced that there are drones. Should there be more? What is the technology? Where is our investment in making sure that the borders are secure through these technologies, but also going to these countries and getting to the root of the problem, which is the organizers.
Just to follow up on something that Bob said earlier, and that is because you're talking about what the Republicans are trying. The Republicans have been saying consistently that one of the reasons why they are against or they're not moving forward fast on immigration reform is that first they want the borders secure. Now, the administration has had a pretty good record. And yours truly has been a supporter of that record, because for the last several years there has been an increase in the number of deportations.
Double the Bush administration.
There has been no evidence that suggests that the administration is lying down on doing their job.
Not at all.
And you know what? That flew in the face of what the Republicans were talking about. But now, given what's happened with this influx of children coming from Central America and the rush on the border, it basically makes the Republican case stronger than it was a year ago.
One of the things the president...
Because the administration at the moment is throwing up its hands and saying, we're overthrown by this, and I think it's a legitimate thing for Charlie to say, is that are there things that the president is saying that is encouraging this activity?
One thing he's
doing... I want
to
get your reaction. We've got to pause for a break. I talk too much. You'll come back and you'll talk a lot. Back shortly. Bruce DuMont back in Chicago. And during the break, we've come to conclusion. We have agreement. Everyone thinks the war on drugs should be halted.
Yeah.
Libertarians...
Absolutely.
The Democrats,
absolutely.
The liberals,
absolutely. It's failed.
The moderate Republicans. It's like...
And because it causes the violence,
that's right.
Just like we saw during the Prohibition, it causes the violence both south of the border and in the United States that fuels the kind of refugee crisis we're currently seeing.
When is there going to be a Democrat who will stand up and publicly state that and lead a national discussion, because some of those that have advocated that, for the most part, some of them are Republicans or libertarians.
Well, that's true. And the president and Eric Holder have both, I think, begun to move in that direction in terms of policy. And let me just back to this one other issue.
But a Democrat survive? Is this, Bob, is this one of these issues that it has to be done by a Republican?
Yes, absolutely.
I think it has to be done in a bipartisan way.
Right.
Why?
And
it has to be the audience why.
Because any Democrat that goes out on a limb like that is immediately going to be castigated by the Republican in a knee-jerk fashion that has been about, we're the law and order party, and now you're going against law and order.
Yeah.
Irrespective of the beliefs of the libertarian side of that party, they will knee-jerk into just attack mode. It's impossible.
Well,
you know, I think I agree with you. I think a lot of the change has already been happening with governors, Republican and Democrat, that have started to ease a lot of the drug laws, whether it be...
Well, here in Cook County, I think that
Illinois. But I think that it will be a bipartisan agreement, and I think that if you look at, if you decriminalize a lot of these or even legalized, you would allow the market, make it a lot safer, and it would dry up the wells of all these cartels almost immediately. The money would come within the margins, if you will. It would become all, surveilled.
Bruce, back to this immigration-related question we ended with before the break.
Mm-hmm.
The president announced the other day one of the things he's going to do is move resources from internal enforcement in the hinterland inside the United States that is fundamentally aimed at breaking up families, frankly, and move that to the border. That's fine. The border, we can secure the border as best we can with all the resources that have been provided by the Congress. It is the destruction of families in this supposedly family-friendly country that is such a tragedy, and that's what I think our Republican friends fail to see. Those people who are law-abiding, except that they came to the country illegally.
Well, so they're not law-abiding.
Wait a second. And have lived here for 20 years and raised their kids and contribute to America. They are people who need to be respected, and the folks in the Hispanic community need to be respected. And if the Republicans don't, it is at their peril.
But there's a possibility,
in this particular case, that you're conflating the issues again.
But I think there's a possibility when we talk about reform and to your earlier point about aren't we a country that we want fairness, and maybe we need to put on the table that part of immigration reform is if you came here illegally. And there's 11 or 12 million people that we estimate are in that situation. We are not kicking you out of the country, but there's going to be some stuff you have to do.
That's what's in the bill. You got to register.
It's in the current
bill. But more importantly, you don't get a shot at citizenship until you leave the country and reenter under a legal format. Now, you can stay. Mm-hmm. You'll never be a citizen. Or you can go and do it legally if citizenship is that important to you.
I think it's also important that this message be delivered more vociferously. And maybe it's delivered by the President of the United States. Maybe it's the President going on television, not so much for a domestic audience, but for those people, and maybe he has someone who's interpreting it and giving it in Spanish. And it's going to Central America. And that is the deferred action, which is passed by Congress, passed in 2008, the people that are rushing to the shores right now, they're not going to have their deportation stopped. That was said today. It's those people who came here after 2011. They're the ones that are going to have deportations put on hold and further delayed. So there's this belief, and again, because of the law and because of the way those can misinterpret the law or lack of knowledge of the law, they're coming to the United States thinking that they're going to be welcome here. And they're not going to be welcome here, not in this particular political climate.
Then the official way to communicate in those countries is not going to work. The president, through an interpreter, talking to citizens in El Salvador, for example, is not going to work.
What's going to work?
People who listen to – you have to use surrogates. Maybe you use surrogates in the popular culture. Who are the musicians? Who are the actors? Who are the people that those citizens connect with that can communicate that message to them? Slow down. You can't come up here. But many
on the political left – are encouraged, in my view, with their comments, they are encouraging people to come here because they do want to conflate these two issues. They want to bring these together because then all of a sudden you're those big, bad, nasty Republicans, and boy, you're going to take women and children, you're going to throw them off buses, and you're going to break up families. I mean, the people that are breaking up those families, Bob, are is a parent who sends their children to the United States alone, unaccompanied.
Look, the humanitarian crisis at the border with respect to these children is a crisis. But the big crisis is the destruction of 11 million families in the United States of people who are right here. And that's what has to be addressed. Let's remember that but what for the Republican leadership in the House, if they'd called that bill, that had passed the Senate, it would have passed the House. It would have been the law right now, and we'd have regularized the whole immigration structure.
And if the borders had been secure, and we were not talking about this influx.
Well, if you guys can tell us how to secure the border better than we're currently securing
exactly.
it, please be my guest.
We can have, perfect
security.
Charlie had a suggestion.
And no freedoms.
Militarize the border. You know, more barbed wire, more electrified fences, drones. There's ways to do it. And again, what I'm just saying is that I think part of this frustration is that we haven't done that piece well first. And I think what's happening right now at the border is just it's making the Republican case that the borders are not
secure. Barack Obama has done it much better.
He did.
Than George Bush.
I agree with that. And I said that. And I don't think they're conflicting. But something changed.
The rhetoric is coming out of Washington.
Or the absence of action.
Absence of action to pass immigration reform that is popular in America, would have passed the House had it been brought to a vote. In an anti-democratic move, the Republican leadership prevented
it. Securing the borders is also popular in America. Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with hour number two of Beyond the Beltway. Tonight featuring Philip Beverly and Bob Creamer and Christine Dudley and Charlie Kirk. And our phone lines are not open, but our tweets, you can tweet us at Dumo, at D-U-M-O. Send me an email, brucedumont@museum.tv. And during the news break, we just kept talking and talking, and the blood pressure's all going up. And I want to come back to something we began the program with, because, Charlie, you didn't really get a chance to respond to it. And that is when Jay Johnson, who's the head of the Department of Homeland Security, was on to television today, he said that we've got to do right by the children, talking about this influx. Do right by the children. Now, this guy is sworn to defend our borders. Why do we have to do right by the children? Why don't we do right for the laws of this country, do right for the taxpayers of this country? Why is it about the children just because they get their mugs on television and parents somewhere are sending them halfway across a continent because they can't care for them?
Absolutely. And he's not running a humanitarian organization.
No.
I mean,
I disagree with you on this.
The
Red Cross should say this.
Exactly. The Red Cross or the
Salvation
UN.
Army.
Some NGO.
Yeah, exactly. Or the UNICEF. If he's not running UNICEF.
The United States of America, when we apprehend children, should treat them humanely because we are.
Well,
because
course,
we are.
No one's suggesting that they aren't.
And that is exactly what he's suggesting.
No one's saying to execute
that
the
we
kids.
Have to we make sure is, that if they are where they are returned to safe circumstances. And that is our obligation to the world because that's what we stand for.
I think we're a nation of laws first and foremost. And he's the head. He's DHS. Department of Homeland Security. I think that if we have porous borders and if his first duty is to make sure the children's safe and welfare are in good standing, that's not his job responsibility. It might be the most humane thing to do in the grand scheme, but that's not his
job. I think looking out
for our kids is everybody's job responsibility. I would disagree with that.
But let's do this then. If you're making a point that there is a role for NGOs, where are the NGOs in this crisis? If this crisis was happening in the wake of a tsunami, we would be all sending money to the Red Cross or to the Salvation Army, primarily the Red Cross, to help these poor people around the world.
Well, I'll be honest, Bruce, this is the first time a lot of people are hearing about this today. And I think the mobilization of such NGOs is, you know, part and parcel of being educated about the issue. I have to be honest with you. I mean, you know, we're all in our summer worlds here and focused on different things. When this issue came to the fore in the last week, I was taken aback. I think that the administration, to their point about humanity, that's where the administration can play a role in mobilizing the NGOs so these children are taken care of properly while they're on our shores.
I agree.
But the crisis, I still go back to, my God, this has been coming for 3 years, and now all of a sudden we just woke up. And
But I believe that we may have been asleep at the switch. We have a disagreement as to whether or not some of these policies or how you interpret these policies have sent the wrong signal. When John Stone was on the air, he said that he wants to they want to send a new signal that the United States borders are going to be secure. That's what he said on the broadcast today. But again, he said that after he said that first of all, we must do right by the children. And what I'm just saying is, if you're going to do right by the children, maybe that is not a United States government responsibility. Maybe that is the responsibility as it is in parts of Texas. There are Americans who are compassionate. They're compassionate conservatives. They're compassionate liberals. They're with NGOs. They're with churches. They're with the various groups. Those groups should take over. And for those people, let's include the left in this. If there are people in the Hollywood left that want to have concerts to raise millions, hundreds of millions of dollars to care for these children, so they, when they are sent back to their homes, they have a life expectancy in their homeland. Let them do that. But I don't think it's the responsibility of the government.
United States because government should.
It's
care
the
about
American.
That.
You think it's the government should do it?
I think difference. The United States government, when it is confronted with children who are 9, 10, 11 years old, who have presented themselves to our borders, need to try and ascertain what can be done in a humane way to make sure that they are taken care of properly and returned to safe circumstances. Yes, that is their responsibility.
Turn them over to NGOs who have tax-exempt status to raise unlimited amounts of money to take care of children in humanitarian situations, just like we do when there's a tsunami, a tornado, or wherever it is around the world. The United States is generous. The people of the United States, they get generous. They dig into their pockets. They send the money to the Red Cross or the Salvation Army. The money goes there, and we trust that those executives aren't taking 50% off the top for their own salaries, that some of that money is getting to people that really need things helped, that need help. But it's not the responsibility. The role of the government is to protect our borders, to secure them, and to enforce the laws of the United States. And you can't say that someone is a great American. They just broke one law. They snuck into the country. I'm sorry. They broke a law. Period. That's it.
Fine. That's case closed. I understand, Bruce. I mean, let's also be clear. Though this is a crisis, clearly, and these kids are important, 52,000 children represent 0.5% of the 11 million people we're dealing with in the United States with immigration reform that would have passed had the Republican leadership allowed it to happen, that would have both increased the resources
those
on the border.
Those people aren't currently in crisis,
the response.
Though, Bob. We're talking
a lot of
about
them are in crisis because their father or their mother or their sons have been deported in the dark of night. Yes, they are in crisis.
And
not recognizing that is what will get, with all due respect, the Republican Party into deep political trouble.
We can argue the political fallout afterwards, but to agree with you, Bruce, and I think this is a different point, why does it have to be the government that has to solve this problem immediately? I mean, they're in
mobilizing,
they're in,
exactly. Just mobilizing the NGO community, right. To your point, Bruce, I think you said it, and perhaps there's a longstanding history of the government reaching out to the NGO and the humanitarian communities.
And
we've done it, as you pointed
that's
out.
That's their mission.
But the difference here is there's a legal responsibility for the government to manage
they have,
this. So it has to be done as a partnership. It's sort of handing it over. Oh, okay, here are the kids.
No.
Give them off to the Red Cross. Wait, somebody has to be responsible.
The adjudication
and DHS is going to be responsible. Full stop. DHS has the statutory obligation to be responsible for everybody crossing the border. So whatever their circumstances are,
this is where you get into the slowness. This is where you get into the frustration of government. It's the slowness. If there's an 11-year-old kid that snuck into this country, forget why he came here. He's in this country. This kid has to be taken care of. I'm not denying that. This kid needs a place to sleep. He needs to be watched until the process goes forward. But you know what? It doesn't have to be done in a federal government detention center. It doesn't have to be done in a military base. It should be done by NGOs who have money for the sole purpose of doing that. And if it means, by the way, that in 2 weeks, let alone not 2 months, in 2 weeks that kid gets put on a transport plane and sent back to El Salvador or Honduras, then send him. Then do it. and make a big point of the fact that you're sending people back to the countries, and it is the responsibility of those countries to take care of their kids, not the United States taxpayer. You got to pause. Stillmont Beck, thanks very much for joining us tonight. We do not have phones, but again, our tweets at Dumo, at D-U-M-O, or Bruce Dumont at museum.tv if you'd like to participate. And now that we got everybody all riled up in everybody's shorts in a bundle, we are going to switch gears to something maybe a little more relaxing, a little more peaceful, and we're going to discuss the Supreme Court decision on Hobby Lobby. And again, we let the Republicans start the last conversation. So this time, we will start with Philip Beverly. Philip, what in your view is the short-term political issue, and what is the long-term ramification of the Supreme Court's decision on Hobby Lobby?
All I heard was Mitt Romney's voice saying, "Corporations are people too, my friend." And me thinking, what planet do I live on where something that is artificially created by people now suddenly has human qualities, like an ability to determine its own religious orientation? I thought it was the most ridiculous decision to come out of a really intellectually deficient Supreme Court in a long time.
Charlie Kirk, you probably see it a little differently.
Very differently. I thought it was a great decision. I agree wholeheartedly, and here's why. The owners of Hobby Lobby have deep-seated religious beliefs. I know that's the soundbite of the week, but I'm going to use it again just for people that haven't heard it. They have deep-seated religious beliefs that abortion goes contrary to their religion. And there are five different birth controls out of 21 that are mandated in Obamacare, five of which that under HHS law are abortifacients, which means that they act in the form of abortion. Hobby Lobby said we will cover 16 out of 21, but the five of which we refuse to cover. And the Obama administration said that will cost you $467 million a year. So they say we are not going to violate our own religious beliefs. It's unconstitutional to force us to pay for something that we think is murder. And the Supreme Court sided with them, and I think a good religious liberty and freedom of speech manner. So I think it's a great decision.
The bottom line is this is about disrespect. Women.
No, it's not.
Women, not their bosses, have the right to decide with their doctors whether or not they have a particular contraceptive method. Not their boss. Their boss should stay out of the bedroom, and I think that is shared. That is a view shared by most women in America. Remember, 98% of women in America have used contraception at one time or the other during their lives. This is a settled question. If these people want to believe that these methods of contraception are somehow akin to abortion, that is their right. But it is not their right to make the decision. They don't have more freedom than normal average working women do about their own bodies.
Christine Dudley.
Well, I would park this flatly at the once again, the Obamacare has unintended consequences across the board as it relates to a bill that they passed that no one knew what was in it. And now we're having to go through all this litigation for the purpose of defining what it is and what it isn't. Employers, and there are liberal Democrats, as I read in Politico earlier this week, and we were just talking about, and I have the article here, who are abandoning the employer mandate. So it gets to all these pieces. It's not just about the piece about, Charlie, you articulated it very well, it's 16 out of 21, the issue of whether or not whether this Obamacare, repeal is too incendiary, and I think that we've gone down that road. But we have to, and the court is the place where the people are making
these.
This is about employers given the right to do what privately owned employers.
Does this issue, Philip Beverly, have the potential of being the bombshell issue that the Democrats have been hoping would come along to get them back in the ballgame come the midterms?
No, I don't think it'll have that kind of impact. I think it's a longer-term impact. I mean, okay, so Hobby Lobby's got a few owners who have these religious beliefs. Great, that's fine. What are the religious beliefs of General Motors, of Google, of Microsoft?
Publicly traded companies.
But they have ownership, and that seems to me to be the question, that corporations have rights as human beings have rights, which I disagree with. And that seems to be one of the underlying issues that we don't want to address. My friends on the right always want to blame Obamacare for everything.
Let me respond to it.
You know, here's the thing. Corporations are not people, my friends.
No. Well, the Supreme Court did rule that, but I'm not going to go on that particular point. The Hobby Lobby, they started that business with one small store in Oklahoma, and they saw it grow to an amazing company. The fruits of their labor should be decided by themselves. They have the property rights of Hobby Lobby. Whether or not they want to cover however many contraceptives, that is their right. It is their name on the title of that company. And if the employee has a problem with that, they can quit. And guess what? The minimum wage in Hobby Lobby is $14 an hour. The employees are paid very, very well.
Here's the problem. The problem is that we, in the United States, we adopted an employer-based insurance system.
You're right. We did.
Frankly, I would prefer a system like Medicare for everybody.
I agree.
In the United States. And that would eliminate this problem.
Absolutely.
But as long as we have an employer-based system, which I think most of you on the right don't want to change, then the question is, do these bosses have more rights to have to do with make the decisions for their employees about the kind of health care they get than the employee themselves has?
So
that's the question.
What if it's not about contraception and abortion? What if it's about pharmaceuticals address diabetes or something?
But at the end of the day, the power lies somewhere else. Have different packages from our health insurance companies that cover certain things, and we make those choices.
That's right.
As to what we want coverage on.
That's exactly what
so
you should have.
At the end of the day, I have that choice, but the employer offers me a package, and I can go and get additional coverage should I choose to do that for the area that I, you know, I just.
Do you think, Bruce, do you think the employer should have the right to say you can't have blood transfusions?
No,
we don't.
So there was a Supreme Court ruling on the lower level that said that there was a Mennonite employer that wanted to say, like, we are against blood transfusions, and they said you can't do that. It's a violation of life of the life component.
What's the difference?
Of the state.
What's the difference?
The difference is a blood transfusion is integral towards somebody's survival, where contraception is, and those five abortifacients, the 16 are, those five are never integral to survival. Go ahead, Bruce.
Ladies and gentlemen, we can't spend too much time, the five of us, talking about something that the Supreme Court has already decided. This program talks a lot about politics and the implications of it. I asked those on the left on the panel tonight whether or not this would be a bombshell issue that could get the Democrats back a little more back in the ballgame for the November midterms. Let me ask those on the right. Does this issue give you, and obviously you're happy with the win, does this give you more ammunition to build your case to the American people that Obamacare must be repealed?
I'll go first. Yeah, I think it does. And I think what it does is it continues a narrative that Obamacare was not thought out well from the beginning and that it needs dismantling, it needs total rethinking. And I think what you're going to see is that this will start a precedent and there will be more rulings after this. And I agree with actually some of the comment I saw Congresswoman Schakowsky on MSNBC who said something I agreed with. She said there's going to be more rulings like this in the future. And she's right, because now it's going to open the door towards more unraveling of the bill, which I ideologically agree with, and we can argue that differently. What I will say is that for the populace, this is going to open a lot of doors that I think will help Republicans and will help the narrative that Obamacare has been
pure political matter. The outcome of the midterms will be determined by turnout questions.
Mm-hmm.
And those turnout questions are associated mainly with African Americans, Hispanics, women, particularly single women, and young people. Yes, I think this ruling will help Democrats turn out single women in particular, because it makes very, very clear the level of disrespect that in this case, five men on the Supreme Court, but five Republican men on the Supreme Court, as it turns out, have evidenced of their rights. And I think that is this question of respect for Hispanics, for African Americans, for young people is going to be an enormous factor in determining whether we turn out the large numbers of people that are necessary. If we turn out the same number of people we did in the primary in the off-year election in Virginia, the same proportion,
yep. Mm-hmm.
Democrats will win, surprisingly, in a lot of these midterm Senate races and House races. I mean, it's all a question of turnout this election.
Right. Always is.
It always is. And I think, Bob, I think you're off your elections. We all know it's mobilizing people. But when you're losing the argument, you change the discussion. And when it comes back, the overarching, I do believe you're right. The Obamacare discussion will not go away as people discover these pieces that were in this voluminous bill that they didn't know were going to have ramifications on
the
their person.
I got to say, and well, also this wasn't the Supreme Court.
Also,
please talk about Obamacare.
But also, I mean, the other reality is the Obama administration has been sort of on a losing streak with the Supreme Court in recent months.
Recess appointments.
I mean, they're not exactly. Well, you wouldn't expect those type of reactions from a constitutional president.
Well, the Supreme Court is not exactly president. What you'd call. Progressive in its orientation. But look, you guys want to talk about Obamacare? Be my guest. I think it is helpful to us that you'd spend your time talking about Obamacare.
Well, so you're right. I mean, this was brought up just because of the Hobby Lobby ruling. We would like to talk about Obamacare, but let's also talk about the lawlessness of the president and the ineffectiveness of the president. You take your pick. We'll talk about it.
I don't think that'll get you anywhere in either case.
I think that if Kay Hagan in North Carolina is trying to say that she likes President Obama, she will lose in North Carolina because he's not polling well.
The threshold question is not President Obama. The threshold question, are you on the side of average people in America or on the side of
Wall
Street?
When you're losing the discussion, you change the subject.
That is the subject.
But no,
the subject is why does the right hate Barack Obama so much?
You cannot
say that the unpopularity of the
president is not going to also be a factor in this particular.
And the unpopularity of the House.
Chicago, don't go away. It's getting exciting. Bruce Dumont. Go ahead. We're back on the air. Go ahead.
We've had a
real Donnybrook during this break. Keep going,
he
Phil.
He does not get the opportunity.
Who he?
Because Barack Obama.
Because he's
does
so busy
not
solving
get the
all
opportunity.
These crises?
No. To be bigger than life like George Bush, the cowboy president that we had for 8 years.
The great
because
orator?
If it's not about oration. It just isn't. In domestic,
what is it about?
In domestic situations, let's say, the president, I think, has struggled in some instances. In some foreign policy
instances. Perhaps because he doesn't
get
along with the Congress?
How do you get along with a body whose one of their leaders says, my job is to make you a one-term president, irrespective of anything that might
benefit
the people
right
in the
United States? Wait a minute. There's a split government right now. There's a split government. You've got
Democrats
who are saying.
For a long time, listeners to this program, and you've been here for at least a decade, right?
At least.
They know you weren't for Barack Obama when he was running for president the first time.
You were not
for Richardson.
I was for Bill Richardson.
Because you didn't think that Barack Obama was up to the job based on your observations
and
of
why
him
did
as
you
a
think
state
that?
Senator.
Not because he was a state senator or a U.S. senator. He didn't have any executive experience.
Well, guess what?
He still doesn't.
Still does.
Point made.
Except,
oh, you think?
Except that he's that guy who killed Osama bin Laden.
Okay,
which
I mean,
is the
good.
Thing that well, that the other that the wait, other wait, the wait, other wait, thing wait, that the listen. Other executive decided to do and then said, oh, I don't really think about it much.
Let's be clear.
But now
this president, this president,
crisis.
This president,
Bob,
in,
Bob,
his,
Bob,
this
Bob
president in his first term, in the first 2 years, passed several of the most sweeping, changes in American domestic policy in 50 years, providing health care to huge numbers of uninsured people. This president conducted American foreign policy that has done its best to clean up the incredible mess made by George Bush that kicked over the hornet's nest of sectarianism in Iraq, part of which we are continuing to see today. I mean, this president got himself reelected because people believed he was on the side of average middle class people and not Wall Street and the big banks, which is exactly who's bankrolling the Republican Party. I mean, come on, fellas, gals. I mean, look, the other thing that I just think should be very clear. The problems he's had in this administration are almost exclusively a result of cleaning up the economic and foreign policy mess of George Bush At the end of the Clinton administration, we had peace in the world and the most prosperous economy in history.
Let's go on one by one.
And Osama bin Laden was plotting.
A budget surplus.
I've asked for tweets and emails, so we're gonna take a few, and then we'll get back to the discussion. John Zuhon writes, Bob Cramer seems only to be interested in using the immigration issue as a political stick to bludgeon Republicans with.
I'm hurt.
If immigration reform had passed, if the bipartisan immigration bill that passed the Senate, which increased, by the way, materially enforcement resources, had been called in the House, it would have passed.
He's
and it would have
right.
been signed by the president yeah. and would be the law today.
CC Rules writes, no amnesty or reform. 750,000 permanent residents a year is enough. The system is working fine as is.
No, that's totally wrong. I'll even say that's wrong.
Charles Nolan writes, the third world is overpopulated thanks to the Catholic Church. Load them in planes and fly them all to the Vatican. Anybody want to tackle that one?
I'll let Pope Francis answer that one.
Charles Nolan.
I will say that contraception and birth control are enormous priorities for the future of the world. All the more reason why it is a healthcare issue and one that should not have been placed into the hands of some religious conviction.
Does the Catholic Church, following up on what Charles Nolan has, does the Catholic Church encourage poor people to have more children that they can't afford, that they have to put on a train and send to the United States?
I think it has been unfortunate that the Catholic Church has not been in favor of birth control. Yes, that has been
an unfortunate
policy. The
Catholic Church has a lot of humanitarian things on both ends, though. So, yes. I mean, they do a lot of relief efforts.
Well, I know that, but
hospitals.
But Charles's point to Charles's point
that they,
is
they encourage. I don't think they discourage.
They discourage contraception, and does that not encourage making babies?
More longevity.
Come on. Charles put an important issue on the table. Nobody wants to talk about it because it's politically incorrect.
The good news.
But that's what we do on this
The good
program.
News is that 98% of Catholic women use birth control.
Things have changed since the Kennedys.
All right. Gary Tiahara writes, Bruce, how does the Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court decision in any way affect a woman's right to abort?
That's what I was saying.
Hobby Lobby just won't pay for it, period.
And it's not even abortion, by the way. It's abortifacients, which are two different things. And I think there's one thing I wanted to chime
in. You only
have
144 characters.
Only 100 characters, so I'll make it really quick. The boss is not saying the woman cannot buy another package or the woman cannot go out to Walmart and buy it. Again, in Hobby Lobby, on the average of similar other companies, the Hobby Lobby employee is compensated much more than in other craft stores or Walmart, et cetera. So they have that extra disposable income to buy any kind of contraceptive they want. So I don't think that the boss is saying you can't go get
in the
this
end,
or that.
In the end, the boss should have nothing to say.
I will disagree
about
these
that. Questions.
It's
so
their company.
When you have a
no, it's not their.
It is their company.
Is
they
not,
started the company.
It's not their insurance. However,
yes,
they're paying
for it.
For it's their money.
It's
their
compensation.
Profit.
Should they have something to say about how their employees use their salaries?
No, and of
it's
course
their
not.
Money
this
that
is,
they're paying
they're,
them. That's what you're saying.
They
should decide by their own moral belief, based on whatever they want to do.
They're
it's
paying
their company.
They're giving an employee an insurance policy, which is then up to the employee to use. This is up to the employee, not the boss.
All right. We got another comment. Gee, did in my opinion, they're all citizens now, referring to what Joe Biden had to say. He calls him Biden the buffoon. Perhaps give folks in Central America the idea our border was open all the time. Love the show. Rob Burns in Boise, Idaho. Again, it's rhetoric, or the answer is yes. All right, that's your opinion.
When they say things,
Melvin writes, let's see, I'll read this. Barack H. Obama and the Democrats and Republicans who support him in seeking immigration reform, allowing illegal aliens to swarm our borders, are traitors. They claim compassion for illegal aliens, yet they seem to have no compassion whatsoever for the American people. They strip away our jobs, especially from the American black community. They bring about the destruction of our health care system by overburdening it, and for the sake of their foreign constituency, reduce American citizens to little more than slaves. The reality is this whole thing is a social engineering exercise to remake America, to debase our culture, strip us of our heritage, and weaken us by creating a house divided against itself. The greatest existential threat the United States of America faces is its own government. To hell with them all.
That's longer than 140
characters. That certainly is.
I've switched email.
Oh, I can see why.
I've switched email.
But that certainly is the position that was taken by the Republican leadership in the House.
No, I wouldn't say that.
That is exactly.
That's not the reason.
That's exactly the position.
No, it's not.
Patricia Stern in St. Charles writes, why are some of your panels so concerned about children from other countries? There are plenty of children in this country who could benefit from the concern as well, and their parents pay the taxes to earn that care and concern. The taxpayers in this country are suffering and losing ground rapidly. Like it or not, people are hurt every day by government policies. This idea that no one should ever suffer is ridiculous.
I mean, I agree that right now there are children suffering that are legal citizens. I don't think that, you know, if we gave them all amnesty, all 52,000 of them, is that good policy?
But the taxpayer,
here's big news.
The
Jose Abreu and Alexi Ramirez have been named to the American League All-Star team. Let's go to...
Oh, is that right?
Go Sox.
Kevin Burns writes, since when can an employer a la carte what drugs are covered?
And that's the issue.
Go ahead.
That's the issue. It's simply that. That's it.
But it's their company. They can do what they want with it. They have their rights. They started the company. They can see their own profits and fruits of their labor go where they want.
Supreme Court did not rule that contraception was illegal.
No.
And I'm a pro-choice Republican woman,
certainly
Bob.
Certainly not.
But you're
it did rule.
It did rule
that this company has some kind of religious freedom.
As an employer, you organize what packages you have for your employees, correct? Some include dental, some include eye care, some include it's.
And the law passed by the majority of Congress and signed by the president said all those packages have to have standard features.
Oh, that was really big bill.
Have standard features, and those standard features should include contraception. That is the law, the secular law of the land. A corporation
does not
have religious rights.
There were lots of things in that bill, as you well know, that are going. And it was stated earlier. There is this that bill. The opportunity was passed in the dead of night.
Much like the Patriot Act, by the way.
But Democrats voted for the Patriot Act. Not one Republican voted for Obamacare.
We'll come back to the political discussion. I think that there is a lot of uncertainty as it relates to the American Care Act. I think that there is a lot of uncertainty because it was not done in a form and fashion. It was a rush job because time was ticking.
It was 100 years in the making, Chris. Come on.
Years in the making.
They've been talking about health care reform since Teddy Roosevelt.
Of Speaker Pelosi. We'll figure that out after we pass it.
You know
really?
What? 10 years from now, it will be a dangerous position for Republicans to say, oh, I was there fighting against
I'm
the Affordable Care Act.
Pull
the
it
same
all
way,
apart.
The same way.
No.
The same way that it is now dangerous for Republicans to say, I was there fighting against
Medicare,
which
they were.
Everything's
dangerous in your world for Republicans.
The same thing that was dangerous for – the same reason why it was dangerous for many Democrats when the Republicans were basically leading the fight for civil rights in the United States Senate.
Strom Thurmond.
The Democrats paid a huge price for being on the wrong side of civil rights legislation.
Right.
Southern Democrats lost control. The whole region of the country was lost because Southern Democrats did not stand up.
Because Lyndon Johnson did stand up.
That's
why.
Lyndon Johnson did it because, frankly, Lyndon Johnson, because he was a Southern Democrat, he could do it. I'm not so sure that John Kennedy would have done it.
No. People said Jack did not want to sign that. Jack Kennedy did not want to.
All right. We have other comments that are coming in. Some of them we'll be reading. I will read, and some of them we'll just read during the break.
We
and
still
laugh
have fireworks
at.
From 4th of July coming on.
We have all that stuff coming. By the way, again, it's Bruce Dumont at museum.tv if you want to email us a question. @Dumo if you want to send us a tweet. Back shortly from Chicago. We are back, and we were talking about political polarization during that period. And again, in case you just tuned in, Alan Dixon, former United States Senator from Illinois, died today, right on the eve of his birthday. And he was one of the reasons why he lost was he was a Democrat who voted for Clarence Thomas for confirmation. And that vote led to his ultimate Democratic primary challenge. And so you were talking, Bob, about, you know, when did polarization sort of enter the bloodstream of American politics? I mean, some might argue that it really began with Clarence Thomas, where you had Democrats, and he was not the only Democrat who voted for Clarence Thomas. But again, that was a use of the system in which you talk about throwing poison in a water. I mean, those confirmation hearings of Clarence Thomas were some of the most devastating hearings in the history of this country, certainly in recent years.
Well, in history of the United States in general, is a wonderful book by a couple of political scientists who basically correlated the political polarization with economic polarization in the United States. Periods of economic political polarization happen when the concentration of wealth owned by a very tiny number grows. That's been true for the last 200 years. And we see as the great compression of economic difference happened during the 1950s and 60s, political polarization dropped off. And it started again about mid-1970s. Mm-hmm. And with Ronald Reagan and the tax code changes and all of the things that ultimately led to the kind of level of concentration of wealth we see now today in the United States.
But again, part of that polarization and the Tea Party has been vilified by the national media and many on the left, but mm-hmm. primarily by the national media, because they believe that those in their party who do not adhere to the principles of their party, right. they should be primaried and they should be thrown out of office. Now, you've decried that. You don't think that's a good idea. And what I'm just saying is, and you volunteered this earlier in the broadcast, you were part of the effort to basically end Alan Dixon's career because he voted with the Republicans.
That's correct. So, no, I don't disagree with primarying people who are a problem. I do think, I mean, who you don't agree with. I think that's an appropriate way to proceed. But the level of polarization in American politics,
which gets us back to this election cycle as it relates to jobs in the economy, is going to be the driving issue. I think there are these other smaller issues. I don't think the Hobby Lobby will allow for some organizations
good
to use it as a exactly.
Yes.
And people, especially I would say across, you know, their economics are going to be the driving forces of their vote. Not, I don't see a lot of difference, and I don't see a mobilization coming forth on anything that hasn't already been talked about.
We have more emails. We have more tweets, and they're coming in. And this is one, Bob, you wanted me to read. We talked about during the break, but you wanted me to read this. And this is from EJ and Sylvia Pagel. None of them look undernourished. What gives? Plump faces, big jiggly butts in tight pants. They've never missed a meal, and they obviously have the money to pay drug cartels to allow them transport through Mexico, not to mention the U.S. paid escorts.
That kind of language speaks for itself. Well, let it stand on its own. That is the position that is ultimately represented by the Republican leadership in the House.
Not.
Whether they would articulate it or not, they are the people being enabled by the Republican leadership's unwillingness to call immigration reform.
All right, Texas Jeans writes, illegal immigration problem solved in two worlds, sanctuary city, in two words, sanctuary cities. Those cities want the illegals. Chicago is a sanctuary city. This is from Posodex. Catholics believe murder, abortion included, to be a mortal sin. By paying in part via premiums and taxes, complying means damnation.
Okay.
All right. Catholics believe. Oh, that came in. The other one is just saying, thanks for a great show. Thanks for reading my tweet. Well, send me a tweet. I'll read it. If I don't read it now, I'll read it at home tonight.
And course, retweet it?
I'll retweet it.
See what we learn around this table.
So back to where we think, because one of the other big stories, I hate to bring this up at the last minute, but last week the Quinnipiac poll came out with a poll that said that Barack Obama was the worst president since World War II. Mr. Professor, your reaction to that. You probably disagree with that poll.
That's a bit hyperbolic, and I get that people polled have to have something to project their anxiety onto, and I get all that. You want the president to satisfy all your wishes and give you ponies and candy canes and whatever. That's fine. The reality is in our business, we won't be able to assess the success of this president for another 20 years after he leaves office. So those kind of polls, I just don't even listen to.
Well, I mean, I obviously agree with it, but I think that it's legitimate because some of the ineffectiveness of his lack of managerial skills. He's had there's been lots of scandals, but let's talk about two scandals close to my heart that I'm actually living through. The first of which is the IRS scandal, which is a mass weaponization of the most powerful arm of government. And then another scandal, which has just been a total lack of oversight. And it's not necessarily his fault, but it's blown up on his watch, and that's why people are upset. That's a VA scandal. So you have one arm where he's bullying people that disagree with him, the other one where he's just simply not being a good manager, and I can see why people feel that way.
All right, on that note, by the way, here's one quick question. I want to read this. How come little Ilian Gonzalez was sent back? He hardly knew his father. His mother died trying to escape. Where was the concern for him? His aunt wanted to adopt him, and the federal government sent him back home.
The reason is because we believe in parental rights. The father wanted him home.
All right, there's your answer. And that's why we send in the SWAT team to get him.
And if I remember, it was very divisive and very emotional, and it was just a
call by Jan Arino. She made a tough call. She sent in the troops to get him.
But we have laws.
On that note, have laws. On that note, we say farewell to Christine Dudley and Charlie Kirk representing the right, and Philip Beverly and Bob Creamer for representing the left. This program is a Jenny B production produced in association with WLS Talk Radio. Our thanks to Todd Nebel and Dan Dorfman for their assistance in the production of this program. Good call screening tonight, folks. Thanks all for the tweets, and thanks for your email. We will be back next week. This is Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.